This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning to you. Glad you're back here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Wow, what a day. Can I just tell you that it's Ash Wednesday, so I know a lot of people are going to be busy taking care of that this morning, probably on their way to work. 2 days ago, it was 65 degrees, and we were outside enjoying the weather. I was getting the car washed, driving my convertible around. And this morning, there's a winter weather advisory in place for some counties, including Gasconade County, I know for sure, but some others, because outside of our studios downtown right now, it's snowing. And I know they're not expecting much out of this, but there are some bands of snow moving through the area this morning. Welcome to the Midwest.
Really?
Where the weather changes daily. Summer, spring, fall, all in 1 week.
I'm sure people who live in, you know, California or Florida would just be so confused to know that
would.
We can drop, you know, 60 degrees. Or I mean, we've had crazy drops where it was almost 80 and the next day it would drop to seriously close to freezing. I mean, it's insane.
And it's dropped 5 or 6 degrees since we got here this morning, hence the snow outside. And at least for the people in California and Florida, we can say we don't have horrible fires, earthquakes or hurricanes. So you have to, it's a trade-off, right, here living in the middle of the country. Lots going on last night, obviously, from the president's speech, from the election in the city yesterday, where Darlene Green is in a neck-and-neck race there for comptroller for really the first time in her political career, because she's been around since the mid-90s, it seems like, as comptroller. And the mayor's race. How about that? Kara Spencer basically doubled up Mayor Jones, at least in the primary for ranked choice voting in the city, and the two of them will face off again in April. We'll see how that goes. We'll have more details on it for you coming up here shortly. Next segment, we'll talk to our friend Genevieve Wood. I want to talk a little bit more about what the president said last night regarding what's going on in schools with the transgender issue. The president said he's stopping all of that, and he featured one of the mothers whose child was affected. That happened to be in the state of Florida. So we're going to talk to Genevieve about that. Dennis Hancock at the bottom of the hour, county councilman on Prop B, which will also be on your April ballot if you are in St. Louis County. So I got all that coming up for you here in just a couple of minutes. But Carl Middleman first, let's get to this morning's short list, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens, America is back.
Yes, indeed. That round of applause, the at least the half of Congress was chanting, they were chanting for him after that happened. And the Democrats sat on their hands. They don't believe him. This morning they're labeling it as lies and half-truths. We'll see what happens.
We got to get him out of here. I've already signed an executive order requiring a mandatory death penalty for anyone who murders a police officer.
Yes, you bet. Long overdue. That's something that we need to get into the law in America. If you take out a law enforcement officer, the death penalty has to be the first option. And some states aren't going to like that, but that should have been done a long time ago.
We are going to continue to fight back, and we are going to continue to speak lies to his truth, to his stealing, and to his cheating. Thank you.
Something tells me that's not exactly how she meant to say that and was completely oblivious that she did. That was a Democratic congresswoman, Kamlager Dove. I've never heard of her before, but she is going to speak lies to Donald Trump's truth.
They sat my child down in a closed-door room with three adults. She was 13 at the time. And what this is really doing is they're asking children which restroom and locker room they prefer to use, which sex they prefer to room with on overnight field trips. And then they are hiding this information, and in our case, actually withholding the information from us.
Yeah, that's January Littlejohn, who you heard she was recognized by the president during that speech last night. Fox and Friends first had her on the air this morning, and she kind of got to explain exactly what her situation was. I was unfamiliar with that particular case, but good for her as a parent for speaking out. She's kind of leading the effort here.
Well, you just know that's happening so many places, including here in the St. Louis area, where those closed-door discussions are happening with the kids, and they're not informing the parents. In fact, they're doing everything they can to keep the parents in the dark.
Yes, they are. I was distracted. I'm talking to Kim.
Your eyes are bugging out of your head.
I look over her shoulder here, and Channel 2 is showing completely snow-covered roads.
In Cuba, Missouri.
In Cuba, Missouri. So clearly down to the south and west of here, where they got a little more snow. But there is some moving into our area. I was distracted by that. So be warned if it's going to impact your drive. Sue Thomas will probably have some information on it. But there are some winter weather advisories out this morning.
The wind is what's going to be not so great. Don't even bother trying to do your hair, ladies. It's not a good day for that.
I thought about that myself this morning.
Well, were you going to curl your hair?
I opted not to because of the wind. Yeah. I just put a little gel in it.
I get it.
Moved on. All right, coming up, we will get to our friend Genevieve Wood, senior advisor at the Heritage Foundation, get her take on what January was talking about there with what happened to her child in the state of Florida. And we'll talk more about Prop B when we come back.
In the height of COVID, our daughter came to us and told us she no longer felt like a girl. And this was shortly after three of her friends had also been seduced by the lies of this ideology. And 2 weeks later, after school started, they socially transitioned our daughter without our knowledge or consent. And I want to be clear, this goes well beyond name and pronouns. They sat my child down in a closed-door room with three adults. She was 13 at the time. And what this is really doing is they're asking children which restroom and locker room they prefer to use, which sex they prefer to room with on overnight field trips. And then they are hiding this information, and in our case, actually withholding the information from us. This is creating a huge wedge between the parent-child relationship, and it's really sending a message to the child that they need to be protected from their parents, not by their parents.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
Yeah, that was January Littlejohn there, Genevieve Wood, in case you didn't hear her voice last night during the speech. The president pointed her out in this situation with her child in Florida. And wow, hearing it from a mom's mouth like that is even more shocking, huh?
It is shocking. But, you know, the most shocking thing in the world to me, Mark, is the fact that you have so many people, elected officials, who ignore voices like hers, who ignore stories like that, say, oh, everything's fine. That only happens like in two places in America, as if that's okay.
Yeah.
This has become a huge issue, and not because it's happening in every single school, but it's happening in a lot more places than people would think. And the reality is the American people don't want it happening, especially parents are concerned. And you have so many elected officials on the left who will not stand up for kids, and in particular, young women.
What did you think in general of the speech? Because Mark and I have been talking about how it is now the longest ever speech, 99 minutes last night.
You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't get bored. I was not, it was some of the best television I'd seen in some time. And it was just the president, honestly, just, I mean, a 45-day report card is what it was. Here's what we've done over the last 45 days since you've elected me. And it was just going through piece by piece, basically all the things he said on the campaign trail, I'm going to do. And here's what we've done, and here's where we are. And I think every poll I've seen that's come out this morning, whether it was CNN or whether it was CBS, shows that the majority of the American people liked what they saw, liked what they heard.
Yeah, it puts the Democrats a bit of a quandary here because they end up on the losing side of popular issues. If Trump's for it, they're against it. If he wants a cure for cancer, they're against it. I mean, if he wants to ban men from women's sports, they're against it. I don't know that that's a winning strategy.
No, I mean, and the visuals that they show last night, I mean, sitting there with these little placards, it looks so childish. It looks so B, you know, I mean, it was like a B movie. It was so bad. And to your point, Mark, the fact that, I mean, on issues that, like, everybody, if you just take political tags aside, you can't stand up and clap for a man and his mom who's been released from Russia, Mark Fogel, and his 95-year-old mom. You can't stand for that. You can't stand for Lakin Riley's mom and sister who were there after she was brutally killed. I mean, you can't stand for this 13-year-old little boy with cancer. I mean, I'm just going through the list of people who, these aren't political issues. They are human issues. And the fact that you can't stand for any of those folks and clap for them just because Trump is the one who's introducing them is just outrageous.
Here's a random question for you that I've thought about. So, you know, presidents in the past have bragged about what they've done and how successful they've been. Trump's not the first one to do it, but Trump does it probably more than most do, right? He kind of toots his own horn. Do you think that some of these people who just cannot stand Donald Trump would like him more? I'm not saying that's what Donald Trump needs to do to try to win them over. By no means am I suggesting that. But do you think that that's part of the issue, is that people just can't seem to get over that part of Trump? Because it seems like the polls show that they like the actual policies that he's behind.
Well, I mean, are you the average person or the Democrats?
Probably the
average.
Well, maybe the average person. I mean, you could include some of the Democrats in Congress, but mostly just speaking about the average person.
I mean, yes, people say, does he kind of show off sometimes? That's part of the package that comes with him. But I will say, you know, last night there was a lot of we did this, we've done that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all me, me, me. And it was funny because my mom actually made that comment before the speech. And we watched, she's like, actually, he's saying we a lot. But, you know, the truth is, he was very right when he said that one thing. You all complained about the border, said we can't do anything about it. We need legislation. We need legislation. It turns out all we needed was a new president. He was 100% correct about that. There was so much a president can do. And to Donald Trump's credit, on the things he can do, he has actually done it. And so he does deserve a lot of credit. Yes, there's a lot of people around him helping out, but he deserves a lot of the credit.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I want to give a shout out and kudos to the Daily Caller News Foundation. I only saw this morning, Genevieve, and didn't really give you a heads up that I was going to mention it. But they put a new ad out. They've put Donald Trump's head on Mount Rushmore, just to the right of Abe Lincoln. And I think that is fantastic. I love that.
Well, it sounds right, because that's actually a Heritage Foundation ad. The Daily Caller ran the story about it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the Daily Caller News Foundation, but it is the Heritage Foundation.
They ran the story.
It's fantastic. Just
well,
fantastic.
Yeah, I would encourage people to check it out. We were running it on X last night. And again, you know, we didn't actually call for him being on Mount Rushmore, but the point was he's done a heck of a lot. We just went through the litany of things that he's done in the first 45 days. And it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it is. Even if the Democrats have tried to block some of it in court, they're not going to be able to block all of it. And I think he's right. I mean, when you have got the support of the American people, winning all the swing states, as he continues to love to point out, and winning popular votes and the Electoral College, they can't deny that the American people are in favor of so much of what he's trying to do. So
you got to keep that going, because what will be able to happen is they'll be able to stop some things right now. But if they keep this up, and you see more of what we saw last night heading into the midterms, I would have to predict we're going to see more history, which is Republicans will pick up seats in the House and Senate and maybe get enough majorities to make some of the things that have been executive orders and the like actually legislative action that is lasting.
It's true. Genevieve Wood with The Heritage, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, we will talk soon. Coming up, Dennis Hancock, county councilman in St. Louis County, talking about Prop B, an issue county voters are going to have to decide April 8th. We'll be right back. Well, you know, yesterday we had an election in the city already, the primary election. Absentee voting is underway now in the county and probably a lot of other municipalities. And you'll get to do in-person voting at the end of the month before the April 8th election. Big school board issues going on. We got these reports this morning of signs being stolen out in the Francis Howell School District because of the nastiness on the NEA-supported side of the equation. There are some important issues, including Prop B in St. Louis County, and we've got St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock on the phone this morning. Dennis, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing fine. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing fine, and you know, timing is everything. You reached out to me last week. I reached out to you yesterday and said, how about coming on tomorrow morning? And little did I know that just yesterday, Sam Page was out there blasting you guys over Prop B.
Well, that seems to become the modus operandi for the county executive. He doesn't want to talk to us, so he talks to the media.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we got wind of it, and there were four of us at the press conference as well, and we're able to talk to kind of set the record straight at the end of the afternoon.
So, you know, I mean, it became pretty obvious during COVID that Sam Page relishes the power he has as county executive. What you guys are saying, if correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, we sometimes have questions for department heads and all we get is the runaround, and that's not the right way to do government business.
Well, that's exactly right, and it goes beyond that. And, you know, we have today, to use a recent example, we had the incident a few weeks ago where the Director of Public Health denied that there was the existence of a euthanasia plan for when the county took the animal control over back from the APA. Well, then a few days, and somebody did a sunshine request for it, were denied that sunshine request because it didn't exist. Well, then they happened to find it.
Yeah.
And then the director said, oh, that's right, I did see that. But we didn't think it was anything to worry about. And, you know, the story just keeps coming out in bits and pieces. Well, there's no, if the county executive chooses to do what he's done, which is nothing, there's no recourse for the council or any taxpayers in St. Louis County to demand accountability for the actions of that director.
And I think
that's what Proposition B does.
I think that what should be noted here, too, is it's not like if you don't like the director's actions that you're able to go fire that person. Doesn't it take five votes on the county council in order for that to happen?
It does. That's exactly right, Kim. It takes five votes. Plus, we'll have a hearing with that individual, and they can present their case, and we'll make our decision after that.
Would those be public meetings? Would the voters be able to watch those meetings if you had concerns about a director?
Well, we you know, there's a fine line there between, you know, when we're talking about dealing with an individual and a personnel issue involving an individual, and normally those types of discussions are held in a private session.
Right.
But there are things that we can do publicly, you know, as far as just, you know, laying out our case, you know, making the decision to do that publicly. So there are things that we're going to be guided by our attorney through that process. But,
yeah.
You know, it's really no different than I think there's 60 municipalities in the county that allow the legislative body to remove an employee. We think it's important for us to be able to hold our employees accountable.
Dennis Hancock, our guest county councilman, and, you know, I think it's important that what the news conference showed yesterday is that there is bipartisan support for this and bipartisan concern, which, you know, the Democrats control county council if they just voted on a straight ticket. which fortunately they have not, a straight party line, I should say. And in this particular case, you're going the extra step to say it would take a supermajority to exercise this power. And, I mean, we don't see votes like that very often on county council, do we?
Well, we don't, and there's a reason why it's a high bar. You know, when you're dealing with someone's livelihood and the, you know, the impact that it's going to have on them and their families,
sure,
we want to be concerned about that. We want to make sure that the information we have is rises to that level. And so I think it's important to have that little bit higher bar than just a simple majority.
So just to get some idea, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but this whole situation that you described with the animal shelter and euthanasia, all of those things, I read about that and reported on it. In your opinion, would that elevate to the point where you feel like at least a meeting should be called with that director between you and the other council members?
I do. I think any time that someone violates the Sunshine Law, I think any time that someone lies to the public in a position of authority, I think that they should be held accountable to that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that is Prop B, which will be on the ballot. A yes vote would give county council the authority to ultimately fire a department head if they're not doing their job correctly. And up until now, that would only have been the power of the county executive, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And so, you know, hopefully people will turn out. It's the only issue on the county ballot this year. And
yeah.
So we want to make sure that people turn out and have all the facts instead of just half the facts.
Well, I hope they do. I know they'll be turning out for some local school board elections. So hopefully we get better than a 10%, 15% turnout again this year. That's the would you support, Dennis, by the way, would you support these April elections being moved to August or November? I know Nick Schroer's got a bill pending that would do just that.
You know, I think that you know, the big complaint last November was how long the ballot was and how long people were going to have to wait in line to cast their ballots. I think separating the municipal elections from the general elections, it really helps keep the line shorter and encourages people to go vote. I think that, you know, I'm not opposed to it, but I think there are reasons why they should be separated.
Interesting. Well, I mean, but you could argue it does drive turnout because they had record turnout almost at the polls last November. Before I run out of time here, on the issue of the Taj Mahal that Sam Page would like to build and move you out of the current county building over there, I saw you had, you've been pushing back against that from the beginning, right?
Right. And, you know, to me, we've never gotten the answer to this very simple question of what's it going to take to bring us into compliance with the city of Clayton's fire codes. I've been asking for 2 years, what's the cost? What have we investigated just that possibility?
Yeah.
And the answer I keep getting is, well, that's not a good decision to do that. Yeah. I don't care if it's a good decision or not. I just want to know what the number is.
Well, that's their opinion. That's Page's opinion that it's not a good decision. But if it costs you $600,000 to upgrade that building, I'm just pulling that number out of thin air, or how much, what was it, $10 million? Was that the price tag on a new building, or was it more than that?
No, it was $600
million.
Oh my gosh.
I
couldn't remember. Yeah, think about that.
Yeah, that's to build it on land that the county already owns.
Holy
cow. So that
cow.
Doesn't include any real estate costs.
Is that all in the taxpayers, or is there money already set aside? How does that whole thing get funded?
Float a bond, I imagine.
Oh,
right.
No, that would all have to be done with bonds and general obligation bonds. And so that, as the administration put it, it would only be $12 a month for every household in St. Louis County.
Oh.
For the next 20 years.
Something tells me Page would be exempt from that, just like he was with his property taxes, where somehow his did not go up, but all his neighbors did.
Does that include like the swimming pool and the spa for the county executive? I mean, good
Lord. Mark, they need that, okay? They need the spa.
That would be part of the new health care plan.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, I hope voters are paying attention to this nonsense, and I hope you guys can impact that decision before something silly like that happens, for sure. Dennis, I'm out of time, but thank you for calling in this morning. We appreciate it.
No problem, Mark. Anytime.
Yes, sir. Dennis Hancock, county councilman there. You got to have background on this information. Probably going to try to. I'm going to effort to put out a voter's guide. It'll include information like on Prop B and some of the local school board elections that are going on. That's something everybody needs to find out about before April 8th. We don't have a lot of time left, for sure. Kim, what are we whimming about this hour?
If you're from St. Louis or you've lived here for any amount of time, there's a good chance that you've heard this, I guess I'll say, derogatory term thrown out. Maybe you've been called it, or maybe you've called somebody else this term. I'll explain when we come back.
Kim on a whim.
If someone in St. Louis calls you a Hoosier, chances are it has nothing to do with the state of Indiana. In fact, they're probably insulting you. Growing up in South County, I heard this term a lot, and sometimes it was even directed at me. According to experts, Hoosier implies someone who's poor, usually white, and from South City or South County. It means something close to a hick or a bumpkin, though it really has a meaning of its own in St. Louis. A scholarly article on the subject gives some examples of who might be considered a Hoosier, including people who leave their Christmas tree up all year, or people who prefer to vacation in Branson.
But why do we have to seriously hate on the people who vacation in Branson?
You love it down there, don't you?
I do.
No, I've been to Branson many times.
Hoosier?
I've definitely heard that term.
Table Rock Lake is one of the best lakes in Missouri. I don't know why it would even have that reputation.
I don't get it either. I have definitely heard this term. I didn't realize it was unique to St. Louis. I don't think of it as, oh, you're from the county, South County or South City, and therefore you are a Hoosier.
We got so many great comments on this when you brought this up in the 5 o'clock hour. And it, you know, people have different interpretations of it. You said that it supposedly refers to people from South County. People in South County refer to people in Jeffco like that. People in Jeffco refer to people in Afton and Lima that way. I mean, it's just a way to insult your neighbor to try to elevate yourself a little bit, right?
Yes.
Because in my mind, it where I grew up, if you called somebody a redneck, it was basically kind of the same thing, because I've known a lot of people that are not economically well off who still have a lot of class and don't leave, you know, they mow their yard and they don't have dogs under their porch and all that stuff.
Like, and there's Fox the Lady opposite, where people are wealthy and they still have, you know, lawn furniture. They use it for their actual living room furniture, and they have the 10 junk cars that are sitting on their lawn, never seem to move.
Because they can afford them.
That's right.
I guess so. Well, apparently this term dates back to the 1800s, and one theory is that a labor strike in the early to mid-1900s, when St. Louis workers were on strike and the workers were brought in from Indiana to take their jobs, supposedly that fueled animosity against the actual Indiana Hoosiers, and then it became a derogatory term used to describe people here in Missouri.
I love it. That makes more sense than any description I've ever heard, because it makes more sense than asking somebody who's your daddy, because that's what I heard one time.
I've heard that.
I'm just saying.
I want people to comment. If you're watching on social right now, you know you're a Hoosier when. Finish that sentence for us.
Or this one, Carl.
Things like, if you've been on television more than 5 times describing what the tornado sounded like, you might be a redneck. If you've ever cut your grass and found a car, you might be a redneck. If you're dead.
Yeah.
That's good. The grass is so tall.
Well, but you know,
I had a car under there.
Foxworthy's talking about something that is nationwide. I mean, it's not people in South County or whatever the guy said earlier, Jeffco, or it's not people in Arkansas. It's not people in Kentucky. It's everywhere. It's everywhere, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, I agree. There's definitely stereotypes.
that's true.
But you don't think you can just say, oh, because you're from this area, you are a Hoosier.
And some people wear like a badge of honor, like our friend Tom Ackerman when he walks in here, or Alex, who's in here on occasion.
Alex Rich.
Went to the University of Indiana, and he's a proud Hoosier.
Well, who was it earlier, though? One of our listeners who had said that he's from, I think, South County, and that he takes it as a compliment. Oh,
okay.
It was Pat.
All right.
From Jefferson County. That's what it was. And we accept being called Hoosier as a compliment.
Word with honor. Right?
Kenny says, if the sticker on your license plate is from 2022 or older, you're a Hoosier.
You might be a Hoosier if you haven't updated your tag because you're too cheap to pay the taxes.
Kimberly, redneck or hick equals rural, while Hoosier is more of urban white trash.
Oh.
See, everyone has their own definition of it.
Exactly. I'd never thought of
it. Did you realize it was unique to Missouri?
I realized as an insult it was unique to Missouri right after I moved here in 1993. I started hearing them refer to somebody as a Hoosier. And I'm like, there are people from Indiana here? They're like, no. But then, you know, then they would explain it. So I learned the derogatory nature of it fairly quickly after landing in St. Louis all those years ago.
Carl, you're from the city. I don't think you're a Hoosier.
Thank you.
He's glad to hear that.
I'm very honored that you
said
that.
Eat his jambalaya.
Thank you for the jambalaya. Yes, it's delicious.
Thank my wife. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Nicole.
I didn't get mine, but I'm sure it's coming. Coming up, we're going to talk to Jeff Manasso on the nation's air traffic control problem.
Get more at 971talk.com.